This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanison and Philip C. We are going to take a look at some markets. US was in the green, Roshan. How did they look?
Yeah, another day in the green. They are still, I think this is the second day in the row that they've hit record highs. The Dow and S&P 500 were up 0.4% each, while the NASDAQ was up 0.2%. Philip, how did Asian markets do?
Now, Nikkei was up 2.3%. That's a record high. That's a correction after a five-day decline. Hang Seng was also up 0.6%. Shanghai Composite up 0.7%. Our neighbor Singapore is up 0.5%. So all green across Asia except back home, KLCI was down 0.5%.
How did I know you were going to say that, Philip? How?
The same goes with the Zag.
It just brought the whole mood of the morning down, didn't it?
Sorry, guys.
Oh, well. Now, what can
not
we do?
Not your fault, Philip. Unless you had something to do with the market movements yesterday, it's not really your fault.
Yeah, because the markets, of course, listen to every word that we have to say. So, but instead of us, you know, so for some thoughts on what's moving global markets, we have on the line with us this morning, Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, thanks so much for joining us today. Now, U.S. financial stocks are the heavyweights that will kick off this week's earnings season. How well did this sector perform in the second quarter of the year?
I think they performed, you know, good, not great. You saw lending pull back a little bit here. Corporations in general have a lot of cash, so the lending's been a little soft. M&A activity was good. Trading volumes are down a little bit. But in general, you've got a U.S. economy for the second quarter that grew by almost 10% plus. So they're doing well. But the thing about the financials, they've led the market. So a lot of good news is already priced in. So I wouldn't be surprised if they have great earnings, good earnings. But, you know, the shares do nothing in respect to that. So get ready for that.
And jumping over to bonds, Joe, the 10-year Treasury yield touched a low of 1.25% last week before staging a slight rebound. What has been driving yields lower at the end of the curve?
That's a good question because we saw a lot of choppiness last week. I think it's the variant, you know, in particular the Delta variant and some concerns about shutting it down again and then kind of slow reopening of Europe and what's happening in Asia, you know, in terms of the vaccinations. But at the same time, I think the market's kind of overreacted when we saw the 10-year yield hit 125. It's bounced a little bit here. And we've seen a little soft patch, whether it's housing, whether it's some retail sales, the PMI numbers, but this is to be expected. The second half of this year, whether in the United States, Malaysia, or globally, won't be as strong as the first half. So the market's kind of resetting, so to speak.
Now, the Fed appears to be concerned over shortages in material and difficulties in sourcing labor. Do you think these are issues that will adversely impact the bottom line of corporations this current quarter?
Well, that's a great question. That'll be top of mind for the analysts talking to the CEOs during the earnings season in terms of, like, you know, your cost structure has moved up. So what does that mean for margins? What does that mean for your earnings? It'll be a mixed bag. A lot of companies have invested through this. You know, they're trying to do more with less, more automation, less workers. So I think it's going to be a mixed bag. And I think the winners in the earnings season, i.e. higher share prices in the next couple of weeks, will be those corporations that have been able to offset higher costs related to the production vis-a-vis more productivity. But there, you know, it's going to be a select group, so to speak.
Joe, while we're speaking about the Fed, what are your expectations from Jerome Powell and this week's semi-annual monetary policy report? Anything in particular you'll be keeping an eye on?
Well, he's going to have to address the fact, you know, when you see wages rising as rapidly as they have here in the United States, that's not transitory. Wages are sticky. So how does he thread that needle saying, like, okay, lumber prices are coming down, used car prices will come down, I hope for sure. but, you know, wages are going to be a bigger issue. And I think that goes back to that productivity issue, automation that companies have to work through. So some of this is sticky. Some of it's not, and that's where, you know, Jerome Powell's going to have to kind of like spread the needle.
So now the G20 has issued a communique on a global tax agreement over the weekend. Is this a proposal that Biden and co. will have an easy time getting through Congress? What are your thoughts here, Joe?
Well, As you know, nothing's easy getting, it's never getting anything through Congress given the kind of composition or the parties involved in special interests. I think in the end, yes, that Biden will be successful, and that's just my opinion. I have nothing to really base that on, but I do think there's a recognition. Remember, the tech companies, corporate America is on board with this global tax agreement. It provides, takes away some of the uncertainty, 15% they can live with. It hurts Ireland and some of these other Caribbean countries. So I think it's going to be a tough slog, but his focus is more on the infrastructure spending bill, and how that all comes together is going to be very interesting.
Joe, I'm wondering whether I could get your thoughts on China for a little bit, because, you know, we've seen a lot of, I guess, pushback or noise from the Chinese side, where we're seeing some more scrutiny towards Chinese companies, or particularly Chinese big tech, the ones to IPO over in the US. But on the other side, you've got firms like, let's say, Amundi, who are looking to double their assets under management in China, Hong Kong, and Taiwan by 2025. The current level is around $120 billion in assets. So looking forward, how do you see, I guess, these two? Do we see more money going into China directly because the U.S.-listed Chinese companies will be more volatile in nature?
I mean, that's a great question in the sense that are they going to list in the U.S. or are they going to go back to Hong Kong? And how do you, and China's got to think about, you know, converting its currency, opening its capital accounts. And ironically, as much as we talk about decoupling between the United States and China, Wall Street is going heavy into China right now because there's a lot of pent-up demand for asset managers, a lot of wealth being created, a lot of transfer of wealth coming. So it's very interesting. You know, we may be decoupling when it comes to manufacturing and supply chains, but when it comes to financial services, I see the binds, the ties are going to get even stronger.
And Joe, the Bank of England expects Britain's economy to grow by 7.25% this year, the fastest since 1941. Would this be an opportune time to start adding sterling-denominated assets like equities and bonds to one's portfolio?
Yeah, perhaps. But, you know, if I was going to make that bet, I would bet on the euro, because I think the euro has done a good the European Commission has done a good job creating kind of the framework for a banking union, more mutualization of debt. So if I was going to make a bet on Europe, I'd probably go more the euro than the pound. And, you know, I don't want to kick the UK and England down because they lost a soccer match, but they're still paying the price for Brexit. So I don't want to pile on because they're having a tough time over there. But I would bet on the euro before I bet on sterling.
Joe, thanks so much for joining us this morning. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, giving us some thoughts on some news that may be moving global markets. I thought his comments about Wall Street going into China were quite interesting, particularly when you take into account the conversation we had with Jack Cousy of VFS Group yesterday, who was of the opinion that the decoupling is still going strong, particularly from the China side.
Yeah, but you see, the decoupling has many different fronts. Right. So you've got the manufacturing decoupling, you've got the decoupling in the sense that could we see less Chinese companies go to the US to list because there are, let's just say, there are more frictions in place right now. But could we see, because of this kind of push-pull marketing essentially from the Chinese government and the regulators, could we see Wall Street and basically funds go to China directly to set up shop there? Now, as Jack pointed out yesterday, it is there have always been concerns because there's a limited amount of their capital controls and things like that when you come to Chinese, and the ability to buy Chinese stocks, equities directly has been limited to a certain degree. So these are some of the considerations in play, but also it's the Chinese consumer, right? It's the number of billionaires that are made there. There's a lot of money to be tapped into, and a lot of Chinese money is tapped. There's interest in U.S.-listed Chinese companies. So how do you see this, play out in the longer term in terms of China's own capital market development?
And Philip, what did you think to what Joe had to say?
Well, this is the disconnect, right, between wanting to penetrate retail markets versus wanting to access capital markets. And you're seeing the problem actually even in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. You look at Bukalapak, they are listing in Jakarta Stock Exchange. But Grab and GoTo are thinking of a dual listing between Jakarta and US and also in US with SPAC. So this is a real tension, right? How do you reconcile both? And I think China is trying to wield its influence to say, hey, you know, if you really want to access these markets to build your business, you also have to think about where you raise your capital.
It's like a firewall for capital markets, essentially. They did it for the internet. They did it for their land at once upon a time. And now they're trying to do it for capital markets. I mean, they have done it already. They're just trying to plug the loopholes that have been apparent for the last few years.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.